Warning, we are a spoilers podcast. At times, we are also an offensive podcast. And we are most certainly a verbally explicit podcast. So if you fear for any of your delicate sensibilities, please back up now before you reach the point of no return. All right, pussies, this is your final warning.
Thank you for joining us once again at Cinematic Anarchy. And today with me, we have Miss B.
Yep.
And Mr. Omar, who we haven't seen in a little while.
What's left of him, which ain't much.
What's left of you? Are you wasting away, Omar?
I'm withering.
Withering? That's about the same. Different level, I guess. And today we're going to be talking about the 2006 film, The Host. A film directed by Bong Joon-ho. I want to make sure that I'm pronouncing these names correctly because I am horrendous at pronouncing any names that are, well, foreign to me, I guess. I'm horrible. We experienced this with another film recently, Kate, where I was constantly mispronouncing names and Miss B is correcting me live on the podcast and I'm still mispronouncing them.
If I mispronounce anything, feel free to correct me live.
Not a problem. Miss B might catch it. If you mispronounce something in front of me, I'm probably going to go with your mispronunciation and keep going. So, that being said, this film is not to be mistaken for the Stephanie Meyer's film, The Host, which we actually had done previously. Different host altogether. Much better film. Much better film.
Different host, but kind of the same host.
Before we really dive into it, just I want to get you guys' initial opinions of this film after having watched it.
Very crazy. Prophetic in a way.
Prophetic and crazy, yes. It's a little weird watching it with the need to wear masks outside on a continual basis right now.
Yeah. Especially that it's what? 14 years old?
Yeah, 14, 15 now? 15? 2001, so going on 16 years old almost. Miss B?
Sorry guys, I was on mute, I'm fucking closing my window.
That's alright.
But this movie's fucking great. I've seen it like 4 or 5 times.
I want to say I've seen it 4 or 5 times just since we picked the movie. Just because I enjoyed it that much.
I've seen it twice.
Twice?
I read it this morning, but that movie was wow.
It's just, I think it's for a 2006 film, what they were able to do with it special effects wise is actually fairly impressive, I think.
Yeah.
Almost impressive. There's one part that I kind of looked at and went, yeah, they could have spent a little bit more time on the fire. They really could have. But,
fire?
The fire, at the very end.
When they shot the monster and what have you with the fire arrow.
I want to say spoiler alert, but if you're listening to the podcast, there's always a spoiler alert at the beginning of the podcast. It's basically, if you haven't seen this film before, turn back, because we're going to ruin it for you. We don't care. You know, this... And it's 2006. If you haven't seen the film, shame on you. Shame on you. That's all I've got.
It is pretty out there. I enjoyed the whole storyline and how everything kind of relates to everything else. I don't remember if they mentioned anything about the little girl's mom, though.
They mention her briefly, basically saying that they wonder if the mother knew that she was dead, or if the mother knew that she had passed away, and they're like, I don't think she would have cared.
Yeah.
They kind of briefly mention her while they're at the little funeral.
When they take the girl away, they do say she might not know this, that, and the third.
Right. So let's just dive right into the sort of the walkthrough of the movie. So the beginning of the movie, it starts in around 2000, and sort of mirrors a real-life incident in the year 2000. Basically, I'm stumbling on my tongue already. In July of 2000, the U.S. military had admitted to dumping 20 gallons of highly toxic chemical formaldehyde into the river from one of their bases in Seoul. The river serves as a drinking source for about 12 million Koreans, South Koreans, pardon me. And so, obviously, you know, the U.S. military polluting a local water source for almost 12 million residents sparked massive amounts of protests. So, Kim, why don't I say Kim? Boy. Bong Joon. Bong Joon. I was going the wrong way. Wrong Korea there for a minute. Oh, jeez. Anybody want to take this out of my hands for 2 seconds while I dig a little hole for myself in the floor here and bury myself? Oh, my God.
Which person are you thinking of? Oh,
I'm thinking of the director, Bong Joon-ho. In his infinite wisdom, decided to create a movie that sort of... It didn't get a lot of play here in the U.S. for obvious reasons, because the United States are sort of painted as incompetent middlemen. You never see the higher-up guys. You only see the middlemen. And they are painted as villains in this movie. So throughout the film, not only did they pollute the river, but every response that they have to this is either a response of deceit, where they're trying to pull the wool over the public's eyes, stating there's a virus that there clearly isn't. A response of further chemical warfare against the creature, Agent Yellow that they used. Or a response of violence in general. They painted the U.S. as sort of villains, which you can imagine made this movie not exactly easy to play off to the general public here. One thing that I've learned by living locally, I don't have to go very far, is that a lot of people don't want to be reminded of the fact that their government is not exactly, or they're not nice people.
Yeah.
They're not nice people. I'm being...
They're dealing with a group of people that don't want to be reminded of their own history.
Right. I'm only saying they're not nice people because if I go further than that, we'll spend the entire podcast discussing American politics and not much else. which we have done in the past and we're not going to do right now.
It's a pretty accurate representation of how the United States handles shit.
Yep.
Pretty much. Yep,
don't admit anything, lie, and fabricate the truth. Create your own truth. Create your own... That's actually prophetic in a way. Create your own truth.
Cringe.
Just a little bit.
It lends a lot to that old philosophy, which is kind of garbage to me. Fake it till you make it. They were kind of on a fake it till you resolve it type of deal.
I don't think they were looking to resolve it, though. I think that the way that they handled it in such a way that they created a new monster, so even if they killed this monster, they had taken the focus, and now they've got this imaginary virus that the monster had created. Right? One of the guys were just sitting down in the hospital like, yeah, here's a little secret. There is no virus. At all.
You know? The American guy? See him.
Yes.
American science.
Yeah. And that was the only thing that Gangdu understood was there's no virus. They're being stupid fucking talking about this shit out loud in front of someone that they think doesn't understand them.
Right.
Because
Americans are fucking ignorant.
Wait, you said no virus?
Aha. Well, you've been around a lot of people. And yes, it's not just Americans that do that too. There's a lot of people that will pull the language barrier and just assume that you don't understand what they're saying. It's like, we're going to go ahead and talk a language that we feel that you're not familiar with, and then if you happen to know what they're talking about and be able to understand it, sometimes it's beneficial to you to just play stupid. Just so you can, oh, really? Okay. That's what you're saying? Good to know. Very good to know. So the entire beginning of the movie, it starts in 2000, revolves around a American military pathologist played by Scott Wilson. Everybody will know him from The Walking Dead. That's like his big thing that everybody knows him for now. Yeah. And he basically convinces his assistant to dump about 200 bottles of formaldehyde into the Han River. Very, very matter-of-fact way, too. Just it's a direct order, and he blames it on the fact that the bottles are just dusty. There's just layers and layers of dust, so just pour this down the drain. And, of course, his Korean assistant just said, well, we shouldn't do that. There's regulations, there's rules in place that we're not supposed to do that. Just dump them in the river. The Han River is a broad river. Why don't we think about this broadly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because fuck the ecosystem.
The things that happened after that, how they moved up until 2006, kind of confused me a little bit. Like, so I guess this creature was supposed to have, I guess, grown in the river after, like, 6 years. And at one point, there were a couple of, like, fishermen that they ran across, and it was in a cup at one point. Like, oh my god, what is this, a mutation? Ew. You know, and the guy was worried about losing the cup, not the little mutant that happened to have been in the cup. And then some guy that's committing suicide off of the bridge happens to see it in the water before killing himself. So
I didn't notice that.
I don't understand the progression, why we needed the... I get the fisherman. I don't understand why we needed the doomsaying depressed guy that jumps off of the bridge. I don't understand that part. Like, they were all... They were all dressed in suits, so I'm wondering if it's just the... some guy escaped his wedding, decided, nope, I'm jumping instead, and... I don't know.
Or a funeral.
Funeral? Could be a funeral, yeah. Who knows? So then we
come the water and... the system.
Say that again?
I think it's the guy that dumped the water in the sewer system.
No, because wasn't he the one of the guys that, he was the guy in the hazmat suit, wasn't he? That had to go
assist everybody? He was the other guy in the hazmat suit when the doctor showed up. He was like, the virus has got to be in his brain.
Yeah.
Yep.
No virus.
He was the guy like in the hazmat suit most of the movie. He was the one that made the announcement in front of everybody at the funeral. There was a lot that he had to do throughout the film, and there was a theme of government ineptness throughout the entire film, just from beginning to end. So we move up until 2006. We get past our fisherman. We get past the man jumping from the bridge, and now we are in 2006, and we come across Gangdu, who is passed out at the snack bar at his family's little. I don't want to call it a restaurant. It's more just,
it's a little
bar.
Snack shop.
Yeah,
it's a snack stand.
It's kind of like the Korean equivalent of what we would have, like food trucks almost.
Yeah,
except for more snack-oriented than,
it's a convenience store on wheels.
Basically, yes. I've seen them. They have, like, lunch trucks that pull up to different places that are kind of like that. Like, you can just get snacks or actual cooked food or whatever. But Gangdu is actually just passed out at the thing, and, you know, some little kid's trying to reach up and steal right in front of him, and his dad walks up, and he's like, can you wake up? Get up. Lifts him up, gets the change out from under his face to give change to this woman who gives her the most disgusted look. Like, did you just take sweaty change off of this guy's cheek and put it in my hand? I think he's drooling. Do you see that? So.
It was a lot, you know, it was your basic run-of-the-mill slacker.
The slacker dad. The guy that should be a deadbeat dad, but he's just sort of a happy, kind of just getting by slacker.
Yeah.
And in this quick moment, you learn a lot of things about him from the fact that, like, he tries to, you know, steal a little bit of food here and there from the people as he's, you know,
yeah,
as he's cooking and handing them the food. You got a lot going on. You move through and you meet the dad, then you meet his daughter, who initially he mistakes for some girl that's running by. That's what initially wakes him up. He's like, you hear, Papa, Papa. And it's, no, that's some other little girl.
Yeah.
He's like, Hyunsu? Hyunsu? No. You find out that his daughter is just coming home from school, and he didn't show up to Parents' Day. Her uncle did. So her uncle basically showed up for Parents' Day,
and he showed up drunk.
Drunk, in the back of the classroom. Which is absolutely wonderful. And, of course, Gungdu does not appreciate that. So they kind of gather together. They go into the snack truck to watch the sister. Is it the sister? Or,
Yeah, it's Gungdu's sister, Namju.
Namju. So they go to watch Namju, and I guess she's an archer of sorts. She's a
an Olympic.
Competitive archery.
I want to say, is she like an Olympic level archer at this point? Are they?
It looks like, yeah.
Whatever it is, it's televised. She's basically shows herself. Everybody's has their character flaws, which are just put right up front, and there are already these things that they're going to have to overcome to be able to defeat this creature later on in the film. You have basically the fact that Gungdu is sort of a bumbling fool. You have the drunk uncle. You have the archer who, the sister who's an archer who is not entirely sure of herself and kind of misses that last shot, even though she is absolutely fantastic. She just has a tendency to choke. And I think the only thing the father had, Gungdu's father had, was the fact that he just kind of loves the kid too much, a little bit too much, and kind of would be more than willing to sacrifice himself for the family. You know, it's like, okay, yeah. No, I want to direct you, but I also understand you're sort of a bumbling fool.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's up? What's going on, guys? Weird pause.
Yeah, just a weird pause in the middle of everything.
They were kind of all bumbling fools in that family.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're, like, crying after, the creature came and attacked the whole, like, crowd of people. They're just the way they're so fucking overdramatic about sobbing and shit. Just rolling on the floor looking like fucking worms. I don't know, man.
Oh, what are we just... We just jumped all over the place there. We went from the attack of the creature to a bunch of people blubbering all over the floor.
Whew. Yeah, when they're doing, like, the memorial thing after the creature attacks.
Oh, okay. So I'm still at the creature attacking part, where everybody kind of gathers down by the river, you know.
Mm.
You know, Gungdu has got to go deliver food to Matt 4. And I realized something. That technically, the creature is not a villain in this particular film, if
no,
you think about
just...
it. The way that he captures Gungdu's daughter, Hyunsu, the way that he goes about things, the creature itself, doesn't attack anybody till everybody is just throwing stuff into the river at it. He is only attacking in retaliation for other people attacking him. If they had just left him alone, had left the creature alone,
yeah,
it probably would not have killed as many people.
Or taken a small collection of fucking prisoners.
But he took prisoners. He wasn't killing them or eating certain people.
Yeah.
You know? So, I think the problem that you have here is that you have this creature who technically is not a bad creature. It's just reactionary to what's going on around him. It's not an highly intelligent creature, but it knows these people are hurting me. I need to stop them from doing that.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much a theme throughout the film. They just attack and attack and attack. And the biggest mistake that little girl made was, near the end of the movie, was the fact that she used the creature itself as a stepping stone to try to get the hell out of there. You jumped on the creature.
It still didn't kill her. It still didn't kill her.
No, it didn't kill her. It put her down.
Not yet. It caught her midair and then put her down gently.
Caught her midair, put her down gently, and then she ran, and that's when it attacked.
Yeah.
That was an ugly piece of monster, though.
So, you know how you have creatures that sort of only attack if they sense that you're afraid as well?
Yeah.
So it reacts to violence and it reacts to fear.
Yeah.
So the entire catalyst to the movie, as you were saying, it actually based around Hyun-soo and basically her being dragged off into the river. They thought she was dead. Like, D-E-A-D, dead. Uh-huh. Another bumbling fool moment for Gung-do, who thought he had his own daughter by the hand. Instead, who did he grab? He grabbed that little girl. It was the little girl that ran in front of his cart earlier. Poppy?
Yeah.
And it was a blink you miss it moment, because all that happened really fast.
Well, he did blink and he did miss her and he grabbed somebody else. So can you imagine how much that must have weighed on him that he grabbed somebody else's kid and basically saved them from this creature and turns around and then
just stood there while his daughter's about to get fucking snatched.
They slowed it down enough to make you realize that if you sped that up in real time, he didn't have time to react. His brain was locked in place. He reacted to the fact that he had the wrong girl, and he's looking at her, and then he looks up, and 2 seconds later, what happens? The creature grabs her by the tail, and they're off into the water. And I skipped over my favorite death in the entire movie. The girl sitting there with her headphones on in the middle of the park, just kind of cleaning her nails, and then 2 seconds later,
mobs of people running past her.
They're all running past her. She's not paying attention. 2 seconds later, the creature has her by the face and is just dragging her across the ground. It's like, well, you don't have to worry about your nails anymore. Your face is gone. That's going to be the least of your problems if you survive this. Which I don't think she did.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure it, like, snapped her neck the second it fucking grabbed her.
One of the things that I can appreciate about this movie is the fact that it goes back and forth between a lot of things. It has a lot of humor to it, but it also has... Bong Joon-ho actually has the ability, and you've seen this, we did Snowpiercer previously, one of our first films, actually, for this podcast. And he has the ability to take you to extreme highs, extreme lows, sprinkle everything with an ample amount of humor at the same time, and it all fits.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the dark humor, though, in this one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it was very, very dark, like, kind of unexpected in a way, but also, like, in the weirdest possible moment.
Once the creature hits, the movie kind of goes at like 90 miles per hour afterwards. There's no real slowdown throughout the entire film. You know, we go directly from that, we go to the funeral, which you were laughing at. Basically, they all kind of get together, and Hyun-soo's death basically brings the drunk, the archer, the father, and the dad together in one little moment. They're all crying, and the next minute they all kind of I think it was the dad that did it. The older man, what is it? Gungdu's father kind of puts them all back, and they fall on the ground and just rolling all over the floor. It went from like real dark to like slapstick comedy in like 2 seconds.
And then you got this like fucking circle of reporters just standing there taking pictures while they're all rolling over each other.
They're all rolling over each other. And then in the middle of that, in the background, some guy's like, there's a Hyundai in the back with this license plate. Hello, there's a Hyundai. Whose is this? Some woman just walks over all of them rolling on the floor, goes after her car. There is an awful lot of humor in this movie, which it doesn't taint the movie. Like you still feel the sense of foreboding, you still feel the sense of a little bit of fear. You know, you get those deep lows, and the humor brings you up a little bit, but you still feel everything that they're going through, and they're just basically this kind of down-on-its-luck bumbling family that needs to pull itself together to save the daughter, which they find out about in a few minutes. So after the funeral and everybody being ushered to the hospital, basically saying anybody that got in contact with this creature, they need to be quarantined immediately.
Seriously, honestly, if you're in that kind of situation... And fucking, I wouldn't have blamed him if he didn't say anything. Don't trust the fucking government.
Well, I mean...
They're like, oh, did anyone come in contact with the thing? And he just, like, proudly raises his hand and talks and, like, gloats about getting the creature's blood on his face. And they're like, get up!
I didn't necessarily get in contact with it, but it did manage to spit a bunch of blood all over my face. You know.
No, it's when he... He didn't spit it. Oh. It's when he fucking dropped the cement...
That's right.
On its tail.
The sign that he picked up and heaved like Thor's hammer into the thing's tail. Yeah.
Nothing explains don't trust the government like that moment there.
Did you see the little box that the little rubber box that they put him in? Was it a box or a bag?
They put him in a body bag.
Basically a yellow hazmat body bag with like a little ventilation thing on the top, you know.
Yeah.
And they packed a bunch of people into the cart that way. Basically, a bunch of people in little hazmat bags. Treating them like toxic waste, basically. Like, you could be a mutant, too, if you touch this alien. No,
it's just a mutant fish frog trying to live its best life.
mutant fish frog? That's...
Fish frog!
That's exactly...
Mutant fish frog with a prehensile tail, basically. Yeah. So it's a fish. It's a monkey fish frog.
Oh my god! It's fucking Mr. Garrison's explanation of evolution.
Exactly. So
it was a lot of things. None of them good.
No. And this is not a good mashup to have in any creature at all. Like, so. They basically drag the entire family to the hospital. And as they go through everything at the hospital, I don't even know how to put this. We were talking about how inept everybody is, basically, in any type of position of responsibility here. Whether it's the government or your basic security guard. They basically just let these guys walk out of there. Like, no effort. No, nothing. This is supposed to be a government facility, right? And they were able to all but just walk out of there. Like, yep, yeah, pretty much everybody here is really stupid. They're not paying attention at all. Armed guards.
Didn't he get out because he, like, held a syringe of his own blood towards a nurse?
That was the second time, if I'm not mistaken. The second time getting dragged back to the hospital. That was the time that he was trying to escape after having been, quote, unquote, lobotomized.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, I mean, the lobotomy didn't do anything other than clear his brain up. Like, maybe he just had a little extra pressure. He wasn't just lazy or, like, just...
Maybe there was something actually wrong in the frontal lobe.
Just a little extra pressure on the brain, and we've relieved that pressure, and you should be able to think clearly now, sir. That's This is not a. This is not the kind of movie. This is the other end of lobotomy. Like we watch Sucker Punch, and the lobotomy's there, legitimately just, yeah, brain dead, like all together. The lobotomies here apparently are like the kind of thing that you would do to remove that little bit that keeps you from having superpowers.
Yeah,
because he was like hardcore determined the rest of that film, just the rest of the film after that. But yeah, so he receives a phone call from Hyun-Soo, and she explains that she's trapped in the sewers, and then the phone abruptly stops working. So...
Well, her phone died. The battery died.
Right, yeah. So the call
she
drops.
She was complaining at the beginning of the movie about how, like, she needs a new phone because hers is trash and this and that, and he pulls out the little, like, soup bowl full of change that he's been stealing from the store.
Like, it's all dimes. You know how long it's going to take you to pay for a phone in dimes?
Yeah.
Apparently, right. Back then, even flip phones were pretty expensive. So, it's this that prompts him to basically get his entire family together and all but walk out of the building. Pretty much with no resistance at all. Like,
I mean, there was a little bit. They're fucking, like, plowing through nurses in the hall.
Well, I mean, near the end, they had all sorts of people running after them. And they almost left the sister behind. But, yeah. It was a pretty anticlimactic escape from prison. This is not, like, Escape from Alcatraz or anything. You know, at best, this was escape...
Escape the CDC.
At best... This was Escape from the Fat Boys playing the Disorderlies in the 1980s film. That's what this was. You're on mute, Omar. I know you're trying to talk, but you're on mute.
Oh, shit.
I see those gums flapping, but you weren't saying anything. I'm like, he's on mute.
Blame it on the alcohol. Escape light.
So you're not just toasted, now you're pickled. You need a little to drink too, right?
because I'm cooking.
Right. You're cooking?
Yes, sir.
So you're having a drink, you had a smoke, and now you're around an open flame?
Not open.
No, he's fine.
I'm just teasing. I'm teasing.
No, not open. I'm just doing some crab cakes in the oven.
Just
oh my god, you're doing crack?
I think he said...
Crab cakes is the accent. I'm sorry. I'm a foreigner.
Crab cakes.
Sounds like a Chappelle skit. Anyway.
Crack cakes.
No, crack cakes. Anyway. So they escape unceremoniously from this... I don't even know. This entire tribe of bumbling fools that just kind of let him go, and then they run like... They're running around the parking lot as they circle the parking lot to get the sister. Like, they're circling, and there's just people running after them, like, behind, beside, trying to catch a moving vehicle, and the sister just runs up the middle, hops into the car, and they escape.
Well, no, there was that one, like, security or nurse or whatever, fucking, who, like, got close to the open door, and then... Gungdu? Right?
Yes.
Fucking, like, gently pushes his face out and closes the door.
No.
No.
Just, you stay over there. We're going to leave now. It's a military hospital. They're supposed to be quarantining these people. You would think that they would have more than just unarmed nurses to run after them. Or some kind of security between point A and point B.
They're supposed to be trained military personnel at those places, have security.
Right. You shouldn't be able to drive out of the building as if it were your average express care clinic. You know?
They just walked out and somebody was there to pick them up.
Aren't you supposed to be under quarantine? Yes, but we feel like leaving. Okay, go. Just, all right. Yeah. Not even an explanation.
Here,
my daughter.
On your way out?
My daughter is still alive. We are going to go save her. No, we're not even going to give you that explanation. Just okay, go. Just
right.
We're going to pretend to run after you with our arms flailing, and then one of us is almost going to catch you, and just push us a little, and we'll back off. No worries. Just a little. All right, so we're going to go ahead and take a very quick break so that we can let our sponsors speak for themselves, and then we'll come back and speak okay. about the second half of the film. All right, slipping back into the podcast after our sponsors, and I think Omar wanted to start us off.
No, no, because we were talking about, you know, they're about to go after the creature. They're about to go after the creature. I'm sorry. I'm a goofy drunk. They're about to go after the creature, guns blazing, and they're just about to raise some hell and, you know, kick ass and take names and whatever. In the prep, middle of prep, you know the brother and the sister, the drunk and the sister, the archer?
Yes.
They kind of escaped when the guy got captured. And I guess they separated each other. The guy was walking around, you know, riding the bus, whatever. He met with his boy, who was supposed to help him out and hook him up, even stole some clothes from him and took him to where he works so he can look on the computer to the ping location of the phone where the little girl called from, their niece. And the guy basically had the police there waiting for the dude. He basically betrayed him.
Isn't that the...
The chubby guy.
Okay, that's the chubby guy.
I think he works like at a cell phone company or something. It was a big building. Anyway, he takes the guy in there, and while the guy's looking for the location or whatever of that ping from that call, he goes into some other room when these guys are just laying in wait. They're about to just jam him up and capture him too. So basically, he betrayed him. The guy is, I guess, he's known to be a escape artist.
So this is all the stuff that was leading up to and the cause of them ending back up in the quarantine. The second...
Yeah, like, they went back to the river where they, like, had lost her. And...
Anyway, yeah, well, exactly.
The creature came back and killed the father?
Right.
Exactly. So they were about to go back to all that, and the guy meets with him. He's supposed to help him. I don't know, Chris, if you remember Sammy.
Yes, yes.
Yo.
Hello.
That's Sammy, my youngest. Anyhow, the guy's supposed to help him and take him to his work so he can look for the ping of the call that the girl did, and he had the police there waiting to capture the guy. And the guy's kind of escaped. He's already out of that room in a hallway, leaving, and the guy just sees him. He just betrayed him, but when he sees him pass by, he goes like, he puts his fist out like, giving him a signal to just go.
Yep. I've got you. I mean, I betrayed you, but I've got you.
It's like, I betrayed you, but I support you. That was real funny to me.
I think that's after... isn't that all stuff that happens after Gungdu gets captured again?
Like, That was after he gets captured.
Okay. Right, so that's after the father dies. The whole miscounting of the ammunition. Basically, he hands his dad off the gun. He's like, "You guys go ahead. I'm gonna take the one last shot, and I'm gonna kill this thing. I'm gonna take him out." And just as he turns around, he's realizing he's counting like, "Ah, oh, damn it! I miscounted. He miscounted the bullets, and 2 seconds flat, daddy's dead."
That was crazy.
That look of just being that stupid.
Right.
He had it when he lost his daughter, and he had it again this time when he realizes that he miscounted the ammunition and basically sent his father off to his death. You know? So he signed the death warrant for his dad, and he initially thought he signed the death warrant for his own kid. So he's really beating himself.
Wait. The father.
Yeah. The father.
The father got trampled by the creature and then smashed.
Right.
Okay.
He thought that he handed his father a gun with one bullet still left in it.
Oh, right.
He miscounted the ammunition, and he turned around and watched as his father got killed. He didn't have a final bullet or anything to shoot at the thing.
Yeah.
that was prior to his second capture.
Yeah. I don't think it would have done any good. I don't.
No. No.
Nah. I agree.
So after that whole scene at the bridge again, Ngandu gets captured, the sister and the brother kind of get split up, and they go off on their own directions. And this is when that whole scene that Omar was just talking about managed to happen, with the brother almost getting captured in the middle of the, was it a high-rise building, or was it actually at the quarantine center where this guy was? Omar?
It was in that building, in that company building where the guy worked. He basically told him, I'll take it to my work, and you can look up the pin location for the thing. And he went in and did it, and he found it. Good thing. It was like part of, I guess, the happy ending, quote unquote, part of the movie where he could find the pin location before he even got captured and managed to escape. But that's what he went there to do. To look for the pin location of the cell phone.
And, so this... I don't even know how to go into this at this point. Ngandu gets captured again. At this point, the government has decided that he knows too much. And their excuse is that there's absolutely no place else this virus could be but in the brain, so we're going to have to lobotomize him. But I know exactly why they're lobotomizing him, is because he knows too damn much at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
So they go and perform their botched lobotomy to try to silence him, which honestly, as we see throughout the movie, it did not fucking work. And they are inept idiots like every other turn in this movie.
Pretty much.
And then we cut over to Hyunsu's brave attempt at escaping the sewers.
And she's in there with this other little kid whose brother died when they were captured by the creature. And fucking, she's like, I'm going to come back for you. I'm going to bring the police, the National Guard. I'm going to bring the army, the navy, fucking everybody. Like, I'm going to get you the fuck out. It was so fucking like heartbreaking.
And then... Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know what she thought was going to happen. Like, she used the creature as a fucking...
It was asleep.
So it was asleep. What animal have you ever stepped on that stayed asleep afterwards?
Exactly.
I've never tried to step on an animal that's three times my size.
Right, and this isn't just...
Especially that.
Imagine jumping on a horse and having it remain asleep. Imagine taking a running leap and jumping off of a cow that's sleeping in the middle of a field. Is it going to stay asleep?
I'd compare it more to like a small whale.
A raging bull.
She was like, yeah, right? Small, greasy whale. Like, she's lucky that the thing wasn't slippery and she didn't fall off of it when she tried to jump on it. First of all. Right, because it looked like it had that kind of slick wetness that, like, a fish would have. And she decides...
That was crazy, though.
She's going to treat the thing like a trampoline. It's that kind of disconnected logic that any kid would have. Like, I can see what I can do here. There's the rope. There is this thing. If I jump off of it, I can climb to safety. Not thinking about... Between point A and point B is you jumping on the back of this creature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I get you're trying to survive, but what in your head thought, if I jump on it...
She's a kid. She's in, like, seventh grade.
Yeah, she's a little kid starting middle school.
I like what the kid said. At one point, they're having a talk. The little boy and Hyunsu are having a talk about all the food that's in the truck. And I think the little boy asked her what she's looking forward to when she gets out. And she goes, an ice-cold beer. She wants an ice-cold beer when she gets out.
Yeah, remember,
had her first sip of a beer with her dad at the beginning of the movie.
Right, that look of disbelief, her father gives her a beer. She goes, "What is this, a beer?" It's like, yeah, you're in middle school now. You can have this. And she goes, like, are you my father? Are you really my father?
That was a cute moment, though. If I had a daughter, I would probably want to be the one who give her the first sip of beer, and then we will have that conversation about beer.
She gave her father that look that my kids have given me on a continual basis. That look of, this guy is a real buffoon, but I love him.
Have you tried giving your kids any beer?
Yes.
Ever?
Yes.
No.
They're not fond of beer, but they like wine.
Well, your child is eight. But my point is usually like around 14. And I've tried with all of them.
I started drinking when I was 16.
Nah. I started drinking super early.
Both of my children started being able to have a little bit of wine around the time that they got their first, for lack of a better way to just say it, I'll say it outright, their period.
Cycle.
Yeah, the cycle.
The first cycle.
Because the cramps are fairly debilitating in my wife's family. And so to take a little bit of the edge off, you know, a sip of wine, you know, just a little bit, you know, it helped.
My grandma would give not beer though, liquor to my cousins, my female cousins when they were like in their teens and they got like their first. Because in my family runs also that the girls, the females get their like really, really bad.
My grandmother was of, mind you, I'm mostly from Irish descent. My grandmother used to rub whiskey on my gums when I was teething as a baby.
I was going to say, a lot of people do the whiskey on the gums thing.
So, I've heard of that. I heard of that amongst the Irish.
Yep. It's a big thing. So.
But, yeah, the whole period thing, when it's really bad, it's done in Hispanic families too. A little bit of rum.
Yeah, we weren't going anywhere near that hardcore. I think the worst that we ever did is at one point my oldest managed to get a hold of a couple of moonshine cherries. Those were woo. she appreciated those.
I've had moonshine cherries and they were the worst.
You didn't like them?
I mean, it was good, but I hate moonshine. Someone gave it to me for, oh no, it wasn't cherries, it was strawberries.
Oh God!
I've tried moonshine twice. The first time I was really young, and it was just a tiny little sip, and I really didn't like it. The second time, I thought maybe I like it this time. No, I didn't like it the second time either.
Someone gave it to me for like my 22nd birthday, and this really cool person, Cynthia, from like back when I was living in Harvard, fucking. Like, she gave me this bottle, this, like, mason jar full of moonshine with fucking strawberries and fruit and shit in it. And I'm like, oh, wow, this looks really great. I tried it, and I can't do moonshine. I ended up giving it to my brother.
The strawberries in general, in liquor, the flesh of the strawberry does not hold up very well, so it becomes very... I don't even know how to... I don't even want to call it chewy. It's not good. It's not.
It like becomes slimy and fucking... It's just the...
Cherries had a better consistency. I wouldn't have tried the strawberry. I mean, I've had the strawberries. I've had peaches. Those are not too bad. But that's because the flesh of the peach I already expected to be like that. You know?
I've seen, because I refuse to try any moonshine anymore. I've seen the strawberry. I believe it is because they ferment that so fast in that hard alcohol that it's not really that pleasant to have.
The texture is just really bad.
I've seen it at this party I DJed a long time ago. And I looked at it and they were like picking it with like little twisters. And it reminded me of what okra looks like when you're like working with okra to cook it. Yeah. Super slimy. It didn't look good.
So to move quickly through the end of this movie, because it does pick up very quickly after this. We have Gangdu, who actually escapes after having supposedly been lobotomized by playing possum a little bit. He ends up getting a vial of his own blood and taking a nurse hostage to try to escape. Okay. First of all, if you're in a military facility run by actual military, you're not escaping, even if you get... They don't care if you get a vial of your own blood put to her neck. They'll shoot her, then shoot you.
Listen.
Just to put you down.
They had a whole cookout outside.
Right.
Everything was needed on that to be a rap video was something playing Dr. Dre the next episode in the background. They were barbecuing, just chilling over there, and this dude woke out, and when he saw that they were barbecuing, he just went ham. Oh, you're fisting out here! And just started kicking shit all over the place.
They even, as he's escaping this time, they even get so far as they run across a guy who recognizes Gangdu. It's like, uh-huh. Is that you, Mr. Park? Mr. Bacteria, is that you? Pull down your mask. Uh-huh. And he's like, yeah, that's me. And they have this weird interchange, and it's just like, you know what? Keep going. Go. And
that was the first time he escapes, though.
Isn't that the second time he escapes, or was that the first time?
When they went to the, like, black market guys to get him a vaccine, a disinfectation truck, that was the first time.
Okay.
And they went through a guy that was or used to be or whatever, a manager with the company that's doing the disinfectation.
All right. Okay. So I'm mixing up the two incidents. So basically, they're all kind of converging on the same area. They know where they're going back to. At this point, the government has announced that they're going to be dumping even more chemicals into the river in the form of, interestingly named, Agent Yellow. Instead of Agent Orange. Yeah. So, obviously, that sparks more protests to the chemical dump, and you hear this announcement going off, basically stating, keep walking until you can't hear this announcement anymore. Bless me.
Bless you.
Keep walking until you can't hear this announcement anymore, and then you will be outside of the range of what this chemical can do. And everybody's just standing around. Like, no.
They're protesters.
They're pretty much fighting the police. At some point, they lay on the ground.
They assumed that they wouldn't just drop the chemicals on top of them, but they did.
Right. They're not protesters. They're people that are yelling and also have decided that they are, for the cause, they have just taken a suicide pact. You know, all right. Yeah. Suicide by military. Let's do it.
Let's fuck it up.
We are also dealing with, at this point, is it Nam-il? Passed out. Or not passed out, but he's just kind of
walking. He dropped off a bridge.
Hmm?
He dropped off a bridge while he was being chased, and then he fucking got knocked out.
Right, so he wakes up, comes to, and he's with this homeless man.
Like, just before he passed out, he texted his sister where the, like, call came from.
Right. And he is dealing with this homeless man. He's, like, looking around. He knows where he has to be and where he has to go. And he's getting ready to leave, and then he sees that this guy has all sorts of liquor bottles just kind of laying around. He's like, I need these bottles. And he's like, I'm going to take these bottles. I'm going to take this. And then he hands his wallet to the homeless guy. And the homeless guy immediately takes a glass bottle and smashes it over Namil's head. And he's like, you think you can just buy anything? He goes, but you know what? I've got nothing else to do today, so I'm coming with you. And he grabs the guy's bag and starts walking away. As Nam-il is just picking himself up off the ground after having been bludgeoned.
In my travels and the little time I spent being homeless, I met a couple of people that will kind of do that.
I have never physically been smashed in the head with a glass bottle before.
Personally, I haven't, but I've seen it happen.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Is it strange that I kind of want to know what it feels like?
Yeah, it is. I'm not curious about it.
It's not a fun feeling, I would assume.
I am pretty sure it's not.
It's one of those things, like, obviously, that, like, some of the more extreme stuff, I'm not going to do that. But it's like, I've seen so many films, whether it's westerns or weird bar fights, and you always see some guy just smash a bottle over the top of somebody's head. And I've always wondered what that felt like. I don't want somebody to do it. I'm not going to go
seek.
You
even get, like, broken glass stuck in your scalp and shit.
Oh, yeah,
and,
I know.
Like, you're going to have to get stitches and... Super fun.
If it doesn't break the right way, the glass from the bottle can lacerate you. Yeah, I can understand that.
I've gone through windshields in motorcycle accidents, but I never had a bottle cracked over my head.
Don't get me wrong. I want to know what it feels like, but I am not going to actively search for the feeling. This is not like, hey, everybody, come over here. I'm going to empty this bottle of Jack Daniels, and you know what? Live... For the podcast, I want you to smash me over the head with the bottle.
I'll do it.
So,
that. I know
so somebody,
you will.
Somebody that supposedly looked a lot like me gas matched with a bottle at this place, some low life drink, a watering hole back in the day. And that led to me and my brother squash a 6 month old little, I'm not going to say beef. We were not looking to hurt each other. But we were on no speaking terms.
Oh my god. You gotta like stop with the pause, man. What the fuck? All I like you said we smashed a 6 month old and I'm like, whoa, buddy.
I didn't say that. We squashed a 6 month old situation where
paused.
I did.
It's with that pause that you did just right there. We squashed a 6 month old and then you paused. And then beef or situation. Both me and her, we're looking at each other like, what did you do to a little kid?
So no, me and my brother didn't speak to each other for like 6 months at this time. And I guess somebody that looked just like me from behind got smashed with the bottle. My brother was there at that bar and he was about to basically run the guy over outside. He was waiting outside for the guy to come out with his car just... ready to run him over, but it wasn't me. I wasn't even there at that place. But there were some people that I used to run with at that place, so he thought it was me.
Ah.
So the next day, we weren't talking to each other at all. But I guess it's the instinct. Okay. And the next day, he goes to my place. He walks in, because I usually used to sit down like in the afternoons with the door open. He comes in. Goes into my kitchen because I live by myself at that time. Pour himself a little coffee because I used to smoke cigarettes at that time. And he sits down and looks at me. So I guess that wasn't you, huh? he haven't even argued since then.
So basically, did he hit somebody else that looked like you?
A person smashed a bottle on somebody. Had nothing to do with me at all. It's just that the guy that got hit with the bottle looked just like me. He was there at the place, but we weren't talking. He wasn't going to come to me and say hi.
Yeah.
So because somebody that looked like you got hurt really bad, he came and he was like, you know, I think we're done with this. Whatever this was.
No. He just ran inside and waited for the guy to come outside.
Oh, no, I'm trying to see where the connection is to you guys having squashed the 6 month-old beef and this... incident.
Somebody basically stopped him from running the guy over and told him it wasn't me.
Okay. Wait a minute. Now
he was ready to fuck shit up because he thought that the guy who got the bottle smashed over his head was Omar, but it wasn't
exactly.
Omar.
Exactly. It wasn't me. He saw that happen. He saw a whole bunch of my guys close by that I used to run with at the time. Mind you, me and my brother are, you know, almost 10 years apart in age.
He was doing it to defend you. That's where I had the disconnect. That's
exactly.
Where I had the disconnect.
So he was outside, like right outside of the club. He got his car and parked like right outside of the place. And he was waiting for the guy to come out. Like as soon as he saw the guy, like I guess somebody noticed his intentions and told them, yo, what are you about to do? And he told, yo, didn't you see what happened in there? He's, no, it wasn't him.
Okay.
He's not even around here.
That's where I had my mental disconnect. I didn't realize that he was doing it in defense of you or thought he was doing it in defense of you. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they told me early the next day, like in the morning, but in the afternoon, he shows up at my place. He walks in, doesn't say shit to me, and then he pour himself some coffee and sits on my couch and looks at me. So I guess that wasn't you, huh?
You see this look on my face, you know, it's... I'm tired. I've got, like, half understanding. I listened to your story, and I was like, I missed something. I definitely...
Nico got all of it.
She did.
I got it.
She did. I didn't. Sorry.
But that day, we didn't say much to each other anyway. We just sat by each other at my place, and ever since then, we haven't really even argued since then.
Well, that's fair enough, then. I mean, his defense of you... being enough to squash the issue, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Well, you know, we never really got along growing up. But he would kill anybody for me. Even he would defend me with people. He would just argue with me.
Oof.
All the time.
I only had one of those...
happens. I guess after that day, he really comes to terms that he might just as well get along with me.
Better to get along with you and be ready to defend you than be pissed at you and ready to defend you, you know?
you ever seen two little kids bickering?
Yeah.
Well, I was 28. I was 28 and he was 19, and we will bicker like two little kids at that time.
That's fair. I've seen little... I have two kids that lived in my house. I've seen little kids bickering. Trust me.
Yeah, but...
I was once upon a time a child that bickered with their sibling all the fucking time.
Right.
The problem is that around that time, I was already a grown-ass man. That wasn't a good look.
Yeah.
I'll be the first one to say.
All right, so let's finish out the final moments of this film here. We are all descending upon the bridge again. They are basically getting ready to set off the Agent Orange chemical. And...
Yellow.
They've... What? Yes? Yellow?
Agent Yellow.
You're really low. I couldn't hear you.
I was whispering.
Ah, okay. So yes, the Agent Yellow. My apologies.
Agent Fuchsia.
Agent Pink. Agent Pink. No? Okay. And it's just sort of a series of kind of... It starts with Gung-Doo basically going after this creature with the same type of sign, except for he breaks the sign off, breaks the concrete off, and just goes at it with the metal pole. Then you have... Was it Namil?
Yep.
Who is just hucking Molotov cocktail after Molotov cocktail. So you're seeing all these things.
He dropped one.
Yes.
That was funny as hell.
You're seeing all these things that are kind of contradictory to what they were in the beginning of the movie. So basically, you've got the bumbling fool father who kept running away from all the problems that were happening to him to... basically facing it completely head on, like, you know, the lion from The Wizard of Oz just got his fucking courage. You've got Namil, who was an alcoholic and is now using his alcoholism basically to his advantage as a weapon, you know, hucking Molotov after Molotov. He ends up dropping the last one and just has this most dismayed look on his face, and I was waiting for the monster to eat him. I really was.
He was full of children.
Yeah, nothing to eat now. Just kill him. He was full of a lot of kids, actually. He that thing ate a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And the homeless man...
It was just the two kids.
Was it only two? The little kids, the little boy's brother out. And Hyun-Soo?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Hyun-Soo died while she was like inside the fish, the frog thing.
Okay.
And they ended up adopting the little boy who was traveling homeless with his brother/not brother.
That was an interesting dynamic between the brother and the two brothers, because they went to go and actually steal from their truck, and there's this whole thing where they're gathering food, and the little boy goes to take cash, right? And he's like, no, you can't take the money. That's stealing. Well, we're stealing food. No. Taking the money, stealing. This is not stealing. This is surviving, basically, you know. And
there's this whole, like, law thing where, like, people are able to steal food if they absolutely need some kind of food. And, like, it's a social game type thing that everyone's just cool with.
Yeah, it's not something that would fly here at all.
No.
But because it's because of our capitalist nature, the fact that we defend our own businesses to the teeth and don't think about the people that are not being fed, are struggling to survive. And they sort of have something in place over there where it's like, if you're just stealing food to survive, that's one thing. Don't steal cash. That's actual theft. You could end up in jail for that.
Yeah.
So the homeless man is up in the eaves of the bridge, and he's dousing this massive monster with an entire bucket of gasoline at the same time that Namil drops his final Molotov cocktail on the ground, much to his dismay. And of course, that this is the most predictable moment the entire movie. You know that the archer is going to come in at the last moment and use that fire. It was a whole setup.
Yeah.
I mean, you really didn't know it happened because the guy dropped the Molotov.
Well, everybody's redeeming themselves in the final moment of the movie. So how else was she going to redeem herself? It was the only really predictable part of the entire movie is that there needed to be a catalyst for her to redeem herself as well. So, you know, Archer hits home, and then we get treated with the worst CGI in the entire film.
That little fire when the monster was running.
It was so good up until that last bit.
I haven't seen such horrible CGI since the dancing baby in Ally McBeal. It was terrible. It was terrible. Terrible. Just terrible, terrible,
terrible.
As Charles Barkley would say. I don't do a good Charles
it's
Barkley.
Terrible.
That was terrible.
No, Charles Barkley said terrible.
Terrible. Just terrible.
Well, he's from Louisville.
And of course we go through the closing moments of the movie. Now obviously here's my thing. Is that now that the creature is dead, they polluted the river with the Agent Yellow again, killed all these people, and how is Gongdu still free? Like there was a whole bounty on their heads to bring them back, and then he escaped again. So you would think that they would try even harder to bring him back, but no, he's able to go back to his little truck with the adopted little boy, and they're able to do, you know. And we close
daddy the movie. Son things.
Throughout the entire movie, Gongdu, this is how you punctuate that he is gone and he has become a better person, because throughout the entire movie, if you watch Gongdu, he is eating nothing but prepackaged foods. He can barely cook for himself. He's basically eating little, you know, squid out of a can and soup out of a box. And yeah. At the end of the movie, the final meal is just this massive meal that he cooked for himself and the little boy, just all set out. And so you kind of it's kind of punctuating the fact that he's become more mature,
he's grown up,
more of an adult, you know.
Yeah, I guess provided the inspiration to not be such a fucking slacker.
Right. He's like basically saying, "I'm not going to,"
you know, a real father when Kyung Seo was still alive.
I know.
Well, not only did he have to adopt the little boy, but he's also taken over the cart for his father, basically inherited it, you know, and, you know.
Inherited it.
Yes, and of course, his brother is still going to college, and, you know, what is it, Namjoon? Is that?
Yeah.
The sister's name? Namjoon is.
Namjoo.
Namjoo. Okay. is an archer, so she's obviously not going to be hanging around the cart. Her thing is basically training and being a...
Yeah, her sport.
Yeah, training for her sport, whether that be in... Maybe she's training for the Olympics. I'm not sure how far they pushed that. But
I don't think there's any other way to do archery. There's no, like, professional archery league.
Gongdu has obviously still got a bit of a PTSD from the creature because he's sitting in front, just staring out at the river with a gun by his side, just waiting.
Oh, yeah.
Waiting for something to happen. He is ready. And he thinks he sees something, but then he's like, no, there's nothing there, and he kind of falls back and goes and lays down with the kid, and it was a... I liked the ending. I did like the ending of the film. All
CGI
in all,
was kind of awful.
Name an American film that just outright kills the kid in the movie. Name an American film that just outright kills the kid.
There's a few.
There's not a lot.
There's a few, but I can't. You're asking me to name things that I do, putting my brain on the spot, and I can't do things when I'm on the spot.
You can't do things when you're half out of it at this.
I know things about things, but when you ask me if I know things, then I don't know anything.
I can't think of any right off the top of my head, so that's why I put you on the spot.
Fuck.
I really, watching this film and having watched Snowpiercer, I'm really interested to actually go through a lot of his other movies in the catalog. I want to watch Memoirs of Murder, Mother, and, of course, Parasite, which we're planning on reviewing at some point very soon. So, yeah, I think Bong Joon-ho is actually probably quickly becoming one of my favorite Korean directors. Rightfully so, with all the Oscars that he won for Parasite. And now I'm itching to watch it, like, well, this is an Oscar-winning film, and it still falls into the category of the whole, it's like a family in peril creature film. Actually, I'm going to loan both of you guys this Blu-ray that I picked up for a movie called Zombie for Sale, that I think you guys enjoy, which has...
I heard about it.
Sort of the same sensibilities as this, but it's obviously a zombie flick instead of a creature flick.
I've heard that he's so bad it's good.
It's supposed to be good. I'm crossing my fingers. I have watched it twice, so I mean, it's not so bad that I decided that I wanted to break the Blu-ray in half. I have a few of those. Why did I spend $20 on this? This would be better for skeet shooting. All right, well, on behalf of myself and Miss B and Mr. Omar, thank you for tuning in and pressing button to listen to us this evening. And go ahead, shout it out, Miss B.
Drink some fucking water, you thirsty bitches.
That was almost a shout.
No doubt.
That was close to a shout. We need to
stay hydrated.
We are getting Miss B a better microphone. Stay hydrated.
You thirsty female dogs.
Drink some water.